Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy.
Presented by the Mary Lou Lemon Foundation.
We have a distinguished panel. I always hate to use that term, because there was a Texas House speaker when I was covering the legislature there years ago who wrapped up the legislative session one evening at midnight and said he wanted to thank all the members for extinguishing themselves that session. And so hopefully we're not going to extinguish ourselves here with this conversation this evening. But we have Jacob Rosecrans, who's in term, what now, four? Your hair has not turned nearly as gray as mine have with this stuff. Okay. Okay. That's what you got to do. Okay. Jacob, as you know, represents Norman, a former public school teacher himself. He's been on the front lines, and now he's seen what's happening at 23rd and Lincoln in the Capitol complex to our public schools. Dr. Rick Cobb, who is the superintendent of Middale Schools, and if you didn't see his back-to-school picture, was it Monday? When was it? Was it yesterday?
Yesterday.
What day of the week was it?
Yesterday.
It was yesterday. Okay. His 31st year. Hopefully he will graduate someday. But he had his lunch pail and his backpack. And just his, it was wonderful. It was a great picture. And Sandra Valentine, who spent a lot of years in the classroom, and on top of that has become a personal foil of the state superintendent these days, right? Mm-hmm.
But she likes me.
Yeah, I bet you are. All right, tell people what you're doing now, though, because you, and why you're doing what you're doing. Because you left the public school classroom, right?
Yes, I resigned in May, and part of that was because of Ryan Walters. I am not afraid to admit that. He and I have had lots of conversations together. I take my 12-year-old with me. Her name is Jade. We have followed him for over a year. We always pull him to the side afterwards, have private conversations with him. Totally different guy when the camera's off. And I have him ask or tell my daughter, like this last time I asked him to tell my daughter exactly what Moms for Liberty was, and he gave her his spill on what Moms for Liberty was, and then my daughter and I looked it up online, and then we came up with our own discussion of what Moms for Liberty was. So he brings a lot of conversation to our rides home. And the reason why I do that is because when my daughter was in first grade, she had a lot of trouble learning to read. And when I found out, when I went to her teacher and I asked what it was like learning how to read in an Oklahoma classroom, I'm from Texas, I learned that it was a whole lot different from what I learned in Texas. So I began asking a lot of questions. And at the end of Jade's first grade year, she finally learned how to read. She told me she wanted to be an author. And actually, the walkout happened right after that. Rosecrans was one of the first legislators I had. I introduced Jade to, and Jade was hooked. Jade loved the hustle and bustle of the Capitol and the Fugate, Representative Fugate. We met him. So Jade is now in seventh grade. We've been doing this for quite a while, and she is my inspiration. And Jade is not afraid to ask Ryan Walters questions, and she's 12. So, yeah.
So tell everybody what you're doing then this year.
So this year, I am at a nonprofit school, and we don't have any religious affiliation. I do have to teach a Bible class, but I don't have to have the Ten Commandments in my classroom. Yeah. So there's that.
Hey, all right. Well, so I thought, Rick, we might start with you as we get rolling around here, because I'm curious. You have the responsibility of helping put together a team across an entire district, make sure the classrooms are filled, teachers are fleeing, we're told, in record numbers. Have you filled all the classes? Are they, what's been the biggest headache, and what are they telling you about why they're leaving?
So part of the answer to that question, those questions, is we still have 22 certified openings. Yesterday was the first day of school. 11 of those are for special education positions. We have, I think, 17 support positions open, and that ranges from the kitchen to bus drivers to paraprofessionals. But I've lost count of how many emergency certified teachers we have hired and how many adjunct teachers we've placed. We've been seeing a lot of paraprofessionals, just, you know, who have good relationships with kids, know that they can advance their career by moving into an adjunct instructor role or an unfilled position. So when I say that we have 22 unfilled positions right now, that's not counting the number of what I call under-certified teachers that we have in our classrooms at the moment. My math coordinator today came back from a meeting with a group of middle school math teachers and is really excited about their enthusiasm, but, you know, to an extent, this group of people is going to be one lesson ahead of the kids, as opposed to somebody who went to college and had methods classes and classroom management classes and all of the things in the student teaching experience that really benefit us as traditionally trained teachers. So as far as the reasons that people are leaving, it's all over the place. I can't tell you that anybody has specifically mentioned the state superintendent on their exit form, but they have mentioned just the political climate in Oklahoma. And I think that, you know, can go a bunch of different directions, but I assume that it has to do with the people who've won statewide offices. And so we also don't have a real high unemployment rate in Oklahoma, so there are a lot of high-paying jobs out there that are not in education. In Middell, we even in a good year, go back 10 years, we lose people to Tinker Air Force Base all times of year. So there, you know, there's a variety of reasons that we have a teacher shortage right now. But I think it's fair to say that the political climate in Oklahoma is a piece of that.
Is it worse than it's ever been?
Yes.
Is it sustainable the way that you're operating now with a whole cadre of teachers who are sort of one step ahead of the student?
It has to be. I mean, I don't know what choice we have. I met with Todd Lamb the day before he took office at UCO as the new president. I met with Todd and Brian Duke, who is the dean of the College of Education. And I've known Brian a long time, and I've gotten to know Todd over the last couple of years really well and developed a friendship there. And the three of us sat down, and Brian shared with us some data showing, it had several columns, but the two columns that stuck out to me were one showing over the last 10 years the number of college students and teacher prep programs around the state, including our private colleges. And the other column that really struck me was the number of emergency certifications granted by the State Board of Education in a given year. Well, that last column finally surpassed the other column in 2022. We have more emergency certified teachers now than we have people in teacher prep in the entire state. And those numbers are only going to get farther apart. So we have to find a way to sustain it. And my message to Brian, and when I speak with other individuals in higher ed, is I want more traditionally certified teachers. However, we have people who are under-certified and we need them to fill classroom roles. How can you pivot to help us get them the training they need to be successful? In one school where I have 7 adjunct teachers this year, if 5 of them come back next year and say, this was great, I want to keep getting better at this, that's a win. Because 5 new adjunct teachers replacing those 5 adjunct teachers next year is really not what we want. And so we need the people that take on the responsibility of being in the classroom to be successful however they got there. But my preference is always going to be for that teacher that went to college with the intent of becoming a teacher and went through that, that program. And so, I mean, one of my favorite people in the world is in the room, Claudia Swisher, and I know that you did Alt Cert a decade or two ago.
Yes.
We'll call it that. And so, I mean, there's always been a pathway outside of what I did. I decided at 16 to be an English teacher. And so that was my path into education. But that pathway, there are more pathways now, and it's supplanting what we've traditionally seen as teacher prep.
So, Jacob, I guess I'm trying to get my mind around, because I think the legislature is trying to get its mind around the leadership at the State Department of Education these days, and the Sound of Music keeps coming up in the sister scene. How do you solve a problem like Maria? Is that how the line goes in that? And I think, you know, you can add, how do you solve a problem like Ryan? And I'm curious, you know, what folks within the legislature are saying. I mean, there's a lot of concern, right, on the other side of the aisle, too, about this and where we're headed educationally in Oklahoma.
Well, thanks for the question. Can everybody hear me okay? Because I'm never letting it go. No, I'm just kidding. So, you talked about leadership. Well, there is none. That's first and foremost. I worked with the State Department of Education for years before this point. And the previous administration, I could get an answer on a question within minutes. Right now, it takes, I just don't. It just doesn't happen. And what makes me so mad about that is that I was elected, not to, you know, not as a Democrat, not as a Republican, but to represent 40 some odd thousand people who may have questions for the state superintendent. Wow. For this.
Freudian slip.
State superintendent. Sorry, guys. I'm not going to be petty, but I may. But no, the thing is, yes, there are people across the aisle who are actually really angry about how he's going about things. The problem is, they are not standing up and saying anything. That's frustrating to me, that's frustrating to the rest of our caucus, and it's frustrating to the thousands of people that I represent. Even, you know, the fact that I'm a Democrat, who cares? The Republicans, they're Democrats, they're independents, and they want better for the state. And when I can't even get a simple answer for, hey, Ryan, what letter did you send out, buddy? Well, which I never got an answer. That's a problem. And let's not forget, he's not some all-knowing God. He has been elected to run the State Department of Education, which is funded by us. So he's making some mistakes.
Well, we found out today that this was Joy Hoffmeister's fault, right?
Of course he's going to try to pivot back to that. Yeah, so the letter, guys, it's kind of out in the news. I think they used some quotes from me. I hope they didn't use my clown quote. They might have, though. Oh, they did use, okay, that's fine. Hey, he is a clown, let's be honest, because if he wasn't, I wouldn't say that. You know what I'm saying? I'm not a mean-spirited person. I knew Ryan before, and this is not the same person that he is, so either he's a puppet, a willing puppet, which is more dangerous than somebody, I think, that even has the ideas, because he'll do whatever the heck they tell him to do, or he's a mastermind, which he absolutely is not a mastermind. So, things like that show you the level of pettiness, show you the level of almost, like, they think they're playing games, they think it's funny. Well, it's not funny because the collateral damage are our children. And that's why I take this very seriously. As somebody was like, hey, it looks like you are fixated on Ryan. Wouldn't you be fixated on a clear and present danger to something you loved as well? Because I absolutely am. And I won't stop either. I mean, I wish I could do more. If I could get impeachment to happen right now, I'd do it. But that's simply not going to happen at the Capitol without your Republican, I'm sorry, that's what it is. We're in a Republican supermajority state. And until they decide that this is something they want, it's just not going to happen.
The letter, by the way, reminded me of the way he sends letters out to the press, to his own staff, to legislators. It just makes me think of Prince Humperdinck and the Princess Bride. I'll send out four copies of the letter of my four, except it's 13 copies of the same letter with his least competent ships. So,
That's true, but you know what the funny thing is? I mean, they even admit it. Like, whenever they tried to trap the employees to see who was leaking, they're like, ha, 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 Elon gave us this idea, and they put it on Twitter. We are dealing with children trying to run a State Department of Education that's trying to teach children. And I don't like it. I don't think anybody likes it. It is bipartisan opposition. It's just that, honestly, until those representatives and senators I work with hear from their Republican, you know, constituents, I don't think there'll be any movement. Now, I will say that I'm getting some reports that, hey, I reached out, because I'm constant on this. Kind of like Bernie, you know, like millionaires and billionaires. Ryan Walter sucks. Well, that's just kind of the way it works. That's kind of the way I'm always going to say that, because I want people to be focused on what he's, not what he's trying to have you focused on, but what we need him, what we need to be focused on, which is his lack of leadership, his ineptitude of the State Department of Education. I mean, I can see it every day. You guys can see it every day. But if you have Republican friends, have them reach out to their Republican friends and then push on. Because that's what they keep telling people who actually do reach out to them. Well, hey, listen, you know, I'm not hearing that. That's not what I, blah, blah, blah. They probably are. They just need a little bit more. And so I say just keep pushing, pushing, pushing. We have nothing to lose. Because this is worse than I could have even nightmared. Whenever I sat right here and warned everybody about Ryan Walters. I did. And here we are.
So I am kind of curious about something, though, because it's a conversation that I have with a lot of folks. And that is, this is a guy who clearly, he's very Trumpian in this respect. He wants to suck all the oxygen out of the room. He loves the attention. And you wonder if you suddenly just stop printing the guy's name or broadcasting it, if, you know, he just sort of dries up and goes away.
I've wondered the same thing. Sure, you guys have wondered the same thing as well. There's a balance I'm trying to find. Like, right now, I'm not going to retweet any, or is that what it's called? Re-X? Who knows?
Elon.
Exhale. I'm not going to do that if it's something he said. Like the video today that was paid for by the State Department of Education denigrating the largest public school district in the state. That's the level of just...
It's a
campaign poll. Oh, it's not very good. Agreed.
No, but I mean it's...
No. It costs money. Just letting you know, yeah.
It's not Ryan in his car.
No. It's not Ryan in his car. Absolutely, it costs money to do that. Cost money that is coming from, I'm sure, the state. Problem is, we do open records requests, and what was it, 130 days, I think, for a local reporter, Kaylee Olivas? 130 days. Just saying, hey, yeah, they never did answer. They were like, hey, where's the porn, buddy? You talk about it 24/7. Where is it? Do you have a list? Where's the books? What are we doing? Let's go. Finally, 130 days later, they say, we don't even have a list. Guys, that's just horrible for them to say something's happening to that level that got people that angry. And it was purposeful. This is all purposeful. That's why we have to stay focused. We have to stay focused, not so much on the social issue stuff that he wants you to be focused on. Let's stay focused on the fact that he's ignoring what's happening in Kingfisher. Let's stay focused on the fact that he is trying to go for the teacher certificate of a teacher who's not even teaching in the state anymore. He's that petty. And I say he, but also Matt Langston also. That person is not a good person to have at the State Department of Education, and I would like to get him fired.
So, we'll come back to answering questions about Matt Langston perhaps later. But, Sandra, so you and your fellow teachers have been dealing with this whole issue, and for you, I'm going to guess, concerns about your teacher certification might have factored into your decision to leave public education, because you would have a target on your back, right, for showing up?
Not just my certification, but my school district. And that, for me, was the scary part. He takes away my license, fine, I'll go work at Brahms. My son is 21, makes about 30 grand more than I do. But an entire district? Come on now. That's totally unfair to all the public school children. That's unfair what's happening in Tulsa, and I'm going to bring that up. It is very unfair what is happening in Tulsa, and that's, he just keeps attacking children when he's supposed to be the state superintendent of public instruction. And I couldn't do that with Jade by my side anymore, because Jade's watching me too. So,
you know, Ms. Sandra, if he takes away your certification, you can still go work at a private school. And that's where he's sending the money to anyway.
Well, I work at a nonprofit now and make more money, so, yeah.
So, let's talk a minute about why Tulsa's being singled out here. I have my theories.
So, at the last board meeting, I spoke, and I told Ryan Walters, I am here because I see myself as the 41% of Hispanic children that are in Tulsa public schools right now. So I am the demographic that he wishes to silence. I am the first generation, the first generation in my family to graduate high school. I earned 2 degrees from Oklahoma Baptist University. I am getting my family out of generational poverty. I am what he does not want to see succeed. And I am thankful that I had the opportunity to tell him that to his face.
I think you saw the state of Texas take over Houston ISD, and he said, ooh, I want one.
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't know that he knows what he's going to do with it when he gets it. I don't think he'll get it. I think that the business leaders in Tulsa are invested in that not happening, but I think it's going to be an ugly and drawn out process. I don't know everything that happens in Tulsa, but I do know Dr. Gist very well, and she's a friend and a colleague, and I'm proud to consider her both of those things. We text back and forth, just nice supportive messages from time to time. But she's somebody that I have a lot of respect for. So I think there are personal reasons to go after Tulsa, but I don't know. I don't know what the end goal is, but if he gets Tulsa, he doesn't stop at Tulsa.
Right.
And I don't know what district is next. I don't want it to be mine.
Right, so he has already, I come from Shawnee, and he has already talked about coming after Shawnee. So now I'm even more mad. Like, don't go after Hispanic children, don't go after my public school. So, yeah.
No, I sort of sense that there's a twofer here. Both of which play to his base and his ambition to be in the second floor corner office at the Capitol at some point. You know, if you compare Oklahoma City and Tulsa schools, and the Tulsa World did a masterful job in the last week looking at the two and comparing them, there's not a lot of difference between the two in the outcomes of student achievement. Because they deal similar in terms of majority-minority, poverty levels are fairly similar, you know, the LLCs. But somehow Oklahoma City, with a male superintendent who's sort of keeping his powder dry on social media, gets a pass. And Tulsa, which has a strong woman at the helm who calls BS on the BS that he says publicly, is in the crosshairs of this thing. And so, you know, he wins with that. And also taking on kids, in my view, who are others in the community, that plays well with his base, I'm afraid. I hate to be that cynical about it, but Jacob, do you sense that too? Or?
Can I say something?
Sure.
Okay, so I actually talked to Tulsa public school leaders, and I said, there's 26 districts right now, that have lower scores than Tulsa public schools. One of them is Oklahoma City, which we already discussed the same demographics, but the lowest one has a 0.8 proficiency rate. Why is he not going after, or why is he not trying to help these districts? The helping part is the part that we're all worried about the same thing. We don't want to take over. We want help, and that's what he's not giving us.
So what does he need to do? What should the superintendent be doing in order to champion public education here in this state and help lift the rising tide?
Well, first of all, he could stop blaming. But I'm going to sound kind of like I'm out in the wilderness with this, but I've made posts about it too. This is a feature of corporate reform, corporate education reform. I know I sound like a crazy person. Guys, that's what it's all about. It's all about making these districts look like they're failing to then come in and say, well, here's a voucher to a private school, or hey, check that brand new entrepreneurial school that's not in the public school system out, whatever. Check out this fancy new charter school, whatever. It's not just here in Oklahoma. It's everywhere in the United States. I rail against this constantly. I ran for office because I despised the fact that I had to give newcomers a state test when they couldn't even speak English, which that was probably the school's fault. But anyway, it's ridiculous. So I think this is all part of a bigger scheme for them to be like, and them being Ryan Walters and people that think like that, to make money, to enrich their buddies. They've got to have something like that in mind, although I do think Ryan Walters also will run for governor, which we need to make sure that does not happen, however that looks. So my thing is, instead of him vilifying, you can look at that, you can break it down, just like Superintendent Hoffmeister did, and see where you can help, not where you can take away. He has no plan. He's just, and honestly, guys, remember when he came in for that that news conference where he was like, we all expected him to say something big, right? No, this little guy's like, we're watching you, Tulsa. We're watching you be bad, and we're going to get you. That's what he did because, honestly, when it comes down to it, he doesn't have a spine. He does have the power to do things bad, but not when people unite and push back. So we have to stay united to push back against this threat to our public schools.
This is just the next phase in 23 years of failed corporate reform that started with No Child Left Behind. We have spent billions and billions as a country on test and punish policies. State tests and national tests where the results rarely move more than just a little bit. And when you do have a school, when you do have an urban school that has progress on those tests, I always tell my teachers, those tests don't mean everything. They don't mean nothing either, but they don't mean everything. When you're growing, let's celebrate that. I mean, I'd rather celebrate other things, but if we're growing in the state test, let's get excited about that. Let's give people a pat on the back. But what happens in a high poverty urban school is that when a group of people has some success, they get cherry picked away. And so urban schools are always playing whack-a-mole with their staff. And so this campus might rise up and be the one that you're touting as, look at what they did, they're high poverty, but look, they have high achievement as well. And then the principal gets promoted, teachers get pulled away to other schools that don't have the same challenges, and then they're starting over again. That's always going to happen in urban schools. Every teacher at our schools is trying as hard as they know how to do. And it doesn't mean that they're not being successful. They're just not getting the same results at every school. And it doesn't tell us anything different than what we knew in 2001. It's student achievement is highly predicted by poverty, not exclusively, but it's the biggest predictor of all. And we work our tails off to try to overcome that. And again, when we have a high poverty school that has great success academically, we want to tell the world. But then we will start losing those people to other opportunities because they're awesome. And they should have a chance to get promoted in their career. So it's, again, you're always chasing that, and billions of dollars in state and federal testing has not changed a thing.
Real quick, as a former teacher in Oklahoma City Public Schools, which my schools that I've taught in always had an F, that's another thing, this A to F scale, you have to understand, it's very, very, very much part of the plan. Oh, you're in a failing school? Here's a voucher. Or, hey, doesn't that charter school look nice? But here's the story. When U.S. Grant got a B on their A to F scale, we were celebrating. I was at the middle school that fed into U.S. Grant. And, yeah, exactly what you said. Everybody left. Everybody was taken away. Their principal who did that was put into Oklahoma City Public Schools, like, leadership. And so, guess what? They fell back again. And it goes to show you, if you're going to have this dumb scale, this arbitrary scale, well, then you better have your best and brightest, and you better keep them there. And I don't see how you do that whenever you can just, let's be honest, too, if you're not in the know, you hear that a school has an F, doesn't that creep you out? Because we're so long, we look at that A to F scale with our kids, with ourselves, right? I got an F, I failed. That's hard to break out of people's minds. And you know it, I see it. I don't know how you fix that except continue to educate, continue to educate, continue to educate, and talk to people and have those conversations. And hopefully we can move past all this test and punish. I was hoping with Joe Biden coming in as president that we'd have a chance, and then we're still doing it. So that goes to show it's a little bipartisan too. But I think as long as we have these conversations and keep going with this type of stuff, then we can change things. But that just goes to show you exactly what he said. And that happens every single year. Anytime you have success, it's a revolving door you're out.
So let's not forget that the F schools are the bottom 5% are Title I schools. So they are our economically disadvantaged schools. Tulsa Public Schools has 75% economically disadvantaged children. Okay, the way our bell curve goes for our F schools, there has to be about 160 failing schools. The way that they calculate the failing schools is not how you think it would calculate. Kids are categorized by their race, they're categorized by their economically disadvantaged, or by their IEPs. So my child has a score that she has to meet as a Hispanic child. The same child in her class who is black or white has a different target score. Then all of that is added up, and it's just not the way you would think it would be calculated. It's not a fair situation at all.
Seems to me, too, that if you really care about improving public education, you'd be, as a superintendent, you'd be championing community schools, you know, getting, you know, so kids who suddenly are uprooted in the middle of the night because their parents have been evicted from the house, or they have come to school hungry and their stomachs are growling, and it's, you know, pretty hard to focus when you live that on the edge existence.
First Lady Sarah Stitt, she says that Oklahoma has the most or the highest adverse childhood experiences. Four or more, if you've never heard of an ACE quiz, my score is an 8. I mean, that's pretty high. That's, again, I'm the demographic he does not wish to see succeed. And that is what Tulsa Public Schools has.
Halfway into the hour here, so I want to throw it open. John's got his hand up. I'll start over here and work my way back.
Secondly, Jacob, I'd ask you, what would happen if a teacher at Santa Fe South, or even one like Northwest or whatever, walked into a classroom where you and I both taught at Centennial? And, you know, would they have a stroke or what, you know, because of the intense concentration? But my big question is what we were talking there before. You know, we've got, I've long been afraid it was going to be both the Moms of Liberty combined with corporate school reforms attacking Tulsa. But this Houston's model is the worst of the very worst. How can we get word out to the business community that this will be devastating not just to Tulsa, but to all of Tulsa schools, but to all of Tulsa? And the only correlation they find in terms of takeovers is that they're predominantly taking over black and brown schools and causing chaos in communities that are led, politically led, by black and brown people, which probably is the real fundamental reason for why they didn't do it.
Well, first of all, Dr. Thompson and I, we taught at the same school. It was Oklahoma Centennial. That was a very, very difficult school. I came from the south side of Oklahoma City, predominantly 96% African American, I believe. But the traumas, my friends, the trauma that I saw, it wasn't even huge class sizes. I had small class sizes out there. But the traumas, I had, three kids shot and killed in gang violence? That's crazy. And what that does, think about it, is that kid going to do well on that test next? No. They need supports. They need supports. And you have to start talking in that way to business folk. Talk to them in the fact that this is going to cost you money. This is going to cost you business. Because nobody wants to go to an area where if they don't see it progressing. Even though these areas definitely could progress if we would just look at it differently and provide supports rather than come in and say, you're failing, your tests are horrible, and we're going to come in and replace everybody in the school. Because that's the system. That's the system right now. That's the system we rail against 24/7. That's the corporate reform system. And you're right. The Moms for Liberty crowd, oh gosh, COVID was the worst thing that could happen to our public schools. I know people died. I know people who died personally. I'm not trying to diminish the fact, but what it has done to our public schools, it's almost unquantifiable. Because now you do have folks, because remember, part of me as a history teacher was like, oh yeah, a worldwide pandemic, we'll unite and we'll fight together. That is not what happened. Especially with the president, Donald Trump, at the helm. So what happened is they became battlegrounds. Our schools became battlegrounds of these masks, no masks, mandates, no mandates. And we still haven't really pushed past that. So you're right. That grew that Moms for Liberty kind of crowd. And now they have kind of teamed up, and they are focused on the different schools. Would love to hear from y'all on this as well.
I think that, John, to your question, and to your statement that Moms for Liberty, you thought was the worst case scenario, and now it's the Houston ISD. And so I think about it sort of in primary terms. It's instead of it being a political primary where you're looking at which candidate is better or worse than another candidate, you're looking at which hellscape is worse than one or another. So it's the hellscape primary. I mean, Moms for Liberty is a group of people that is sowing chaos in schools. We've had a right-wing think tank in Oklahoma for 30 plus years that does nothing but sow seeds of discord. And I think that Moms for Liberty is a group that is sprung from the same movement. I think what's happening in Houston is really sprung from the George W. Bush movement. And going back to No Child Left Behind, everything bad. I mean, you can go back to William Bennett, go earlier than that if you want to. A Nation at Risk, you can go back to that. But the truth is that, when George Bush and Ted Kennedy, two guys who grew up in private schools, decided they were going to reform public education, they failed. And they even wrote into the original No Child Left Behind language that states would have certain criteria for taking over schools. And I remember back in the early days of that movement when Sandy Garrett was still state superintendent, and you'd have schools that got to year 4 on the needs improvement list or year 5, and they would get close to get taken over, and then a reset would happen. And I don't know that the state of Oklahoma ever took over a district or a school site. And so I think that without going through any kind of process at all, we see an elected official on the precipice of doing that here in Oklahoma. Houston has had a years-long process to get to this point, and I think it's a terrible idea, and what I'm reading about how it's being executed is even worse. But in Oklahoma, we don't even have a written process for doing this. It's just on a whim, somebody deciding, I want to do it. And that's what I think is terrifying all of us that care about our communities and our local public schools.
Sandra, you were at Little Axe last year, right?
Yes.
If I remember correctly. And you were, were you at Shawnee before that?
No.
Okay, all right. Anyway, what do parents tell you about how they feel about their schools and their kids' schools and so forth?
Parents love their public schools. That's it, bottom line. Parents love their public schools. If they didn't, 95% of the kids would be going to public schools.
Going back to the Houston thing, I just wanted to say that the man who is taking over Houston right now doesn't even have a superintendent's license, has no intention to get a superintendent's license. So if Ryan Walters does what he wants to do and appoints somebody as superintendent, who's he going to appoint? I mean, seriously.
Representative Fugate believes that Gino DeMarco will fill that role. Who else has got a question? Surely this group is engaged in hang on. A member of the Oklahoma Journalism Hall of Fame.
I don't remember raising my hand,
though. Then why did you look at me like that?
Oh, I have so many. My mother was a first grade teacher in Norman. She taught at Kennedy. And I'm disgusted and appalled. And I'm wondering, as an ex-reporter, are we giving him too much publicity?
Yeah.
Are we giving him that opportunity to sell this?
Yeah.
And should there be a way, and it's frustrating. There are over 200 pending open records requests just to figure out what he's spending money on. Nobody can get it. It's going to take the grand jury in order to do that. But I think sometimes it almost feels like we're giving him what he wants, or at least what Matt Langston wants. We're putting him all over TV, all over the newspapers.
And I think you're right. I think that, in fact, whatever I think his agenda is, this is exactly how I would play it if I were he. Because he's getting what he wants. You know, when every time somebody retweets him, even if it's just a screenshot of something ridiculous he said with all the misspelled words, our readings were though, you know, he, right. Yeah, I thought I was going English. It drives me crazy. So even with all of that, even if we're not directly retweeting him, it is giving him publicity. And he's not trying to be popular in the state of Oklahoma. He's trying to be popular within a movement. And the Republican primary for governor in 3 years will be decided by a small group of people, not Oklahomans as a whole, and not even the mainstream Republican Party as a whole. So, yeah, he's getting life breathed into his goals every time we focus on him, and at the same time, he's doing destruction. And I don't know how we don't focus on that. I don't know how the media ignores that. I don't know how many different state and federal agencies are investigating him. I think it's more than maybe three at least. So I don't know. That is incredibly newsworthy.
So
everybody knows that.
So I grapple with this question myself because I take my daughter to events where he is speaking. And if you didn't know this already, we were at the Shawnee... whatever you call it, the Shawnee event where he actually said that he wanted to do away with federal funding. So I knew exactly what that meant. He's in a crowd of Republicans and they're going, yay, take it away from the children. And I post it online and it goes crazy. And it was right before the primary, so I'm thinking, okay, people are gonna understand that this is a bad thing. And that's not what happened. You know, we've had chances to stop him, and then I was there when he did the kitty litter video, and I thought, okay, this is another crazy thing that he said. Nope. People didn't care about that either.
I honestly tracked down where the kitty litter thing came from.
Yeah.
There was a program that a lot of active shooter training going on.
Yes, exactly.
There was a program where one of the professors that was teaching recommended, especially in elementary schools, keeping a tray and a 5-pound bag of litter so if children were on lockdown, they had a place to go to the bathroom.
Right, and he twisted that.
Yeah.
And he twisted that. Joe Rogan has come out and said that exact same story, that that's where it originated from. So yes, and then we were at the Norman, at the Norman event where he did the whole Tulsa Race Massacre comment. So again, well, I have four black grandchildren, and they will definitely learn and know that it was about race.
So, Jacob, are you investigating the Chinese influence on Tulsa Public Schools too?
So you'll see me go back and forth, kind of between putting a spotlight on him and what he's doing, and also trying to just say, no, let's not listen to that. That's what he wants us to get all riled up about. And honestly, guys, he's an expert. Whoever it is, they're experts at really gaslighting people to the point where it makes sense to them. Now, he's only really focused on that base that can get him through to the governorship. And I kind of wonder, because honestly, I mean, a Democrat's going to have a tough time winning a statewide race. I'm just going to say it, okay? That's just what's going to happen. So, my thing is, I struggle, because I wish that we wouldn't have to do this, you know? But I am happy that the news is covering the crap. I just wish they would kind of cover the crap that we need them to cover. But then I get it, because honestly, look, news places, they're running short of people too, you know? And so, oh my goodness, you have to get something out here. And what is it? It is this guy doing this stuff, and it is dangerous, and his bark is louder than his bite, but he has some bite because he's able to have that school board in Stitt's image. And Stitt also kind of holds on to him. He keeps him far away. And I was like, oh, that guy, Ryan. But then he also empowers everything that he does. So we need to keep a focus not on just what Ryan is doing, but all the other stuff behind all that. Once again, the willful incompetence and negligence at the top. Yes, I have talked to some Republicans who were like, well, we're probably going to wait until the investigations come down. That could be a couple of years. Hopefully not, but it could be. So at this particular point, I think it's kind of where you choose the two evils. I know what you're talking about. At this time, I think we still need to have people focused, but at the same time, we are in our silos. I know the people that are retweeting my stuff are not super fans of Ryan Walters. So I'm trying to have those conversations behind closed doors rather than relying on what I'm seeing on Twitter, X, formerly X, whatever. That's what I'm trying to find the balance of, because I know it's important to have these conversations. And if we just let them do what they want in the dark, they will still get this done. And he will still be able to say, well, hey, look, maybe he's able to then say, oh, but look, I have bipartisan cooperation or something like that. So I think it's really important to keep a spotlight on there, but it's hard. Very good question. It's very tough.
So, Rick, do you talk to superintendents around the state? And what are they telling their legislators about what they see happening?
I can't speak for their superintendents, what they're telling their legislators, but I do talk to other superintendents, and very few of the people in my peer group have ever had a single conversation with Walters. I have reached out and invited him to the district. I haven't heard anything. Our metro superintendent group has invited him to our monthly breakfast. Not only has he not declined, he just hasn't said anything. So there's no response. There's no effort to meet with us. In January, Trent Smith, when he was still on the school board, state school board, he met with us. And we didn't agree with everything, but we had a really good conversation. We didn't agree with much, actually, but it was still a good conversation because you can still get in a room with people that you don't share common ground with and have a good conversation. And if nothing else, biscuits and gravy. And so, it was good. Walters won't come to the table with us. And that's frustrating. I think people know, I didn't get along or I didn't agree with a lot of the policies of Janet Barisi when she was state superintendent. But she would meet with us a lot. She would seek us out. this is when I was a curriculum director and more, but she would seek out superintendents and other district leaders to try to persuade us that her agenda was good for kids. I didn't agree with it, but she made the effort. And when she insulted us, it was a gaffe. It wasn't a baked-in feature. And so that's what's really different from that time period to now. And so then we had an 8-year respite where we actually had somebody working with us, and I didn't always agree with Superintendent Hoffmeister. And she still invited us back to the table, even when we had disagreements, which is what a leader does. And so it's the fact that we can't actually get the guy leading the state school system, to the table. What bothers me most about all of the stuff going on with Tulsa right now is that you have the mayor going back and forth and talking to both parties and acting like, well, I know both of them and they both have points. No, this isn't a both sides thing. Yeah. These two people need to be in a room together having a conversation, and that's not happening. And so I think you know, if that's not going to happen, then there's no sincerity in trying to help Tulsa's kids. And you look back to a year ago when the State Board of Education sanctioned Tulsa and Mustang, and neither one of them had the opportunity to defend themselves at a state board meeting. They had no due process at a state board meeting when their accreditation was lowered. The Mustang superintendent and other people from the Mustang community had to speak during public comments. That's the only opportunity they had to defend their district and talk about the ways that they had turned themselves in and actually tried to correct the problem. And they were still deemed by the State Board of Education. So there's no due process, there's no process at all. It's just whatever we decide, we're going to do it. And we're not going to work with anybody, we're not going to give the appearance of working with anybody. And it's very disheartening.
Sounds like fascism to me.
So I'm going to ask a really kind of scary question. And let's fast forward a little bit and assume that the FBI does come forward with some allegations. They indict. Does that help him or hurt him in the Republican Party? Considering, you know, how the FBI is now positioned.
That's a really great question, because it's kind of surprising to me how the far-right conservative wing has turned on the FBI. I mean, that's law enforcement, right? It's party of law enforcement. Well, I'm sorry, but that's law enforcement. And so I think that's a great point, Andy. Could it just help him do better in a primary? It might. What do you think, Andy?
I see what you're saying, Andy. You know, you're thinking about and this is Representative Fugate, for everyone who doesn't know, he represents Middell, so proud to have him here.
Yeah, I do hear from my superintendent.
You do hear from Middell. I communicate with mine. I texted my state senator, Brenda Stanley, on the way here and said, any idea what's in that secret report? She said, I'll know when you know. You know, you think about the Trump effect and the way all of the FBI investigations... The way all the investigations are coming down on him, and it doesn't seem to hurt his popularity. Trump has decades-long public persona and a history where he has charismatically won people over in a way that I don't necessarily comprehend. But I recognize it is a phenomenon. I don't understand the phenomenon. Walters doesn't have that. So, I mean, his support has very shallow roots. So I think that an investigation or any kind of actual charges against him would sting pretty hard. I think that there are legislators on the other side of your chamber who would love to have a reason. I don't know what would happen in the Senate, but I think there are Republicans in the House who would love to have something tangible to say, well, there it is, we got him. You know, have their John Oliver moment. We got him. You know, but I don't know how far that would go. I don't think it would help his candidacy to actually have charges against him. But I'm processing out loud, and I haven't really thought about that. But I just want to see it happen. If a crime has been committed.
What is the difference between the job of the Secretary of Education and the Superintendent of Schools? And what is the fair way, what would you say would be a fair way to evaluate public schools?
Okay, so the first part of the question, the Secretary of Education is an appointed position who reports to the governor. And that person, by statute, is over OEQA, which is the Office of Educational Quality and Accountability, which is actually the only statutory responsibility of the Secretary of Education. But that person is a policy advisor to the governor, much like any other cabinet-level position would be a policy advisor to the governor. And so they can work with state boards and do, have we don't have one. The last one quit after what, 3 months, 6 months?
She saw that and she's like,
I'm out. He's out. And so the state superintendent, on the other hand, is elected, and is in the actual title is superintendent of public instruction. And the state superintendent that we have is more focused on private schools and on indoctrination, although not the left-wing indoctrination that he claims to be focused on, than he is on public education. The second part of your question about a fair way to evaluate schools, if we're going to have state tests, I think that you can look at schools in comparison with other schools that are demographically similar in terms of probably poverty is the most telling statistic. I think you can look at progress of students from year to year. There's some testing element to that, but that's not how the tests are used right now. On the state report card that we have, we had some schools last year that were D's in terms of academic achievement, but the second column was academic growth, and there were B's. And that's the thing you celebrate. If you're growing, but you're not where you need to be, then you celebrate that. You can also recognize schools that have low teacher turnover, because if you have low teacher turnover, you're bound to have more academic success anyway, whether you're testing for it or not. Jacob or Sandra, what are some other ways you would say are good ways to recognize schools?
The report card. Going back to my daughter being the Hispanic child who is trying to get a target score, and her peers, her economically disadvantaged peers, have a different target score, and her peers on IEPs have different target scores, the growth that you're going to see is mostly going to come from your IEP kids. So you want to see that growth, and you want to celebrate that growth. You don't want to get dinged because a certain demographic did not do well, and that's what's happening. Schools with more diversity are the ones that are getting dinged because they have more opportunities to earn a certain score. The report card is ridiculously hard to talk about in terms of scoring. There was something else I was going to say and I completely forgot.
I've gone on and on about this. You know, what are better ways to measure student achievement, to measure teacher accountability? A test is not the way to do that. Okay, tests, the way that they were whenever I was growing up, maybe most of us were growing up, weren't they used to help a teacher figure out kind of where they could help the kid?
Yes.
Because now, these scores don't even come in until that kid's already into another grade. It is a scam. It is a big scam, and it is across the United States, and it is corporate education reform, which we talked about earlier. So what's a better way? Well, holistically, looking at the whole picture, it may take more money. It's going to take more time. But at least you'll have a better picture, and then you'll know, okay, I need to support this school. I need to support that school within my district, whatever it is. And I know people are going to say, well, Rosecrans, it's a federal blah, 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 blah. Not necessarily, because the ESSA has changed since No Child Left Behind, and it allows for different types of measurements. We don't have to have an A to F scale. We don't have to have that. It's usually what happens is these corporate reformers choose whatever looks easiest for people to understand, And then they can use that and say, well, it's an F, so we need to replace it, or here's a voucher, or whatever else, you know, insidious ends they might try to do. I can go on and on about that because it's my passion. I really do hate that, but Sandra?
I remember.
Okay. So, like, in what is happening with Tulsa Public Schools, they are having board meetings every single month talking about their MAP scores. And MAP scores are what the students are taking. It's the test that they're taking that shows their growth from one test to another. They're being very transparent with that kind of growth. And what happens in public schools is that students are practicing all year long for a basketball tournament that doesn't happen because in April they're playing in a football tournament. The test is totally designed completely against what they have been practicing all year long. So, for example, Shawnee had a tornado April 19th. About 2 weeks later, we get an email as parents saying, oh, we are going to bus your child so that they take the test because it's you have to take it, right? My daughter is traumatized. My husband lost his business. My son lost his business. My senior this year doesn't have a school to go to. Trauma has entered into our family, and now they want my 12-year-old to go and take a test. So me, knowing how the test works, I told my daughter, I said, if you let the teachers do what they need to do, and you answer four or less questions, your test will come back, did not attempt. You do what you need to do for your mental health. Forget what score needs to happen.
Another thing about that I'll say is that it's always been something that can be manipulated. If one of the slides from Walter's presentation last week about Tulsa talked about how their school sports had dropped from, I think, was it 2017 to 2022. And what he didn't mention is that in 2018, the agency that the state, the Secretary of Education leads, OEQA, under Natalie Shirley, was the Secretary of Education at that time, they changed all of the proficiency scores. And so basically, we went from 50% proficient to about 30% proficient in most tested areas. We didn't get dumber, we didn't get worse at teaching. They changed the target. They raised the basketball goal from 10 feet to 15 feet, basically. And they've done that multiple times. As soon as we get good at a certain test, they change the game. It goes the opposite direction, too. I remember my first year as a principal was 2002, and we had just implemented end-of-instruction tests for Algebra 1. And I think that first year, if I remember right, 31% passed. And the next year, it was up close to 70. We didn't get that good at teaching Algebra 1 in 1 year. They recalibrated the test. And so it's when the state agencies have the ability to skew the pass rates up or down depending on what narrative they want to present, it's hard to accept that narrative.
So
we still don't have eighth grade science scores. We still do not know what those cut scores are. And these kids took this test in April.
But you take the ACT or SAT and you get your scores back in 2.5 weeks. So I don't know.
Well, we're
just a problem. And I know this doesn't help in terms of individual teachers and buildings, but what is your opinion of the NAEPS test?
Again, it probably means something. I just don't know what. I don't get NAEPS scores, so we are selected by a randomization process to have a certain number of grade levels give tests, or give the NAEPS test. And so I might have three schools and four total grade levels that are selected out of 19 campuses that we have. I don't get any results back. So it's a day that we spend that's disrupted so that the federal government can carve out a narrative about Oklahoma's results. But I don't get any feedback on how our kids in Middell are doing. And it might not even be a whole grade level. It might be a statistically targeted sample from that grade level of students from different subgroups. So, you know, I would say that there is a statistician who probably understands the process better than I do who could tell you why that sample size is you know, is valid and why the results mean what they say they mean. But it's hard for me to say much about the results when I don't know what standards the tests are written to, and I don't ever see the results of my own kids. It's just, it's hard to put a lot of stock in that.
So we're a little past the hour, and I promised to get everybody out in a reasonable time. We haven't discussed, well, so if Ryan Walters did get impeached or had to leave office, who would be his replacement, appointed by Kevin Stitt, which would be interesting to think about.
Representative Fugate.
He'd take it in a heartbeat, right, Andy?
I absolutely can.
Okay, all right. We've not discussed the superintendent's notion of using curriculum from Hillsdale and Prager. Speaking of indoctrination. I want to throw one last thing out here real quickly. This group here is very pro-public education, wants to see our schools succeed, recognize that it's the genius of the American system. It's all built on public education. What, give an assignment to all of us in this room. What should we be doing in the year ahead? With school starting, what should we be doing to try to make sure that our schools have a chance to succeed in the midst of the stitches. You know what I mean.
The very first thing that you need to do when you leave here is find a teacher and tell them they're doing a great job. Okay? The reason why you're having a hard time finding people, you know, those highly certified teachers, because they're not stupid. They're not going to stick around in this system. And that exodus was happening well before COVID. Want to know why? It's because corporate education reform. It's because, hey, whenever I became a teacher, I all of a sudden realized it was high school. I was a data engineer. That's the last thing I wanted to be. I hate math. I'm a history teacher. Yeah, I was sitting there looking at the greens and the reds and the yellows. That is no way to teach, and the kids didn't give a rat's crap about what it was. They care about learning something that means something to them. So tell a teacher you love them, but make them really understand, because they need it right now, because we have amazing teachers that are struggling through this system, that are struggling with that guy at the top, and the governor that we have too. He's not exactly welcoming and saying, hey, you're doing a great job, teachers. That's what you have to do. That's my homework assignment. Keep it positive. Keep focused on the BS that Ryan Walters doesn't want you to be focused on. But then also keep positive and realize that this is the big dream, just like what you said. This is it. Public schools, they should reflect us as a public, as the whole entire state. That's what they should do. So please give some love to a teacher as soon as you leave here.
Early childhood certified, I am elementary certified, and I am special education certified. I am gold.
Is this a job interview right now?
It is absolutely true that you need to tell teachers that you care about them, that you love them, that you support them. They are in your churches. They're in your book clubs. They're all around you. You know they are not doing the things that Ryan Walters says that they're doing. These are people that you see every day in the grocery store, all around you. You have teachers in your families, I'm sure. We need support. We desperately need support.
My advice is keep it local. We are running a $492 million bond election on October 10th. And there's no way in the world I was going to get a microphone and not pitch that. But the reason I think it's going to pass, one, we're focusing on safety, security, and so many other things, that we went to our teachers first, and then went to the community and got a great amount of feedback. We filled up binders of feedback from our people before we put together this bond package. But the reason I think it's going to pass is that the Middell community trusts the Middell educators to do their job and teach the kids. And I don't get complaints in my inbox about indoctrination. I don't get complaints I get complaints about bus stops. I get complaints there was a whole rant about Raisin Bran last year. I'm not going to go into that. Yeah, something about how they hope I choke on it. I get some rants, don't get me wrong, but I don't get any rants about the stuff that you hear Stitt and Walters and other, I would say, fringe members of the legislature talking about. That's not what our community believes is happening, and I think it's because we've done a good job of staying engaged with the Rose State College community, the Tinker Air Force Base community, and the four municipalities that we serve. And so the reason I can take a very bold and aggressive bond issue to our voters is that I feel like they know who we are and we know who they are. And in the communities where that bond is strong, I don't think it really matters what happens at 23rd Street. Yeah, I agree. It's been a 20-year slow exodus from education, but it's not a linear curve. Linear increase. It's curvilinear. Sorry to go math on you there, but I mean it's approaching an asymptote, if you will, and so it is scary to think about where we're going to be in 5 years in terms of what the teacher workforce looks like, but what I do believe is that even at whatever that does look like, our community is still going to trust our schools because we're going to make sure that we know them and they know us.
Well, thank you all for coming. Don't forget, Sunday night in Norman at Big Brewing Company, Brews and Views, and come back here on September the, why do I have to keep looking this up? 14th, thank you. And Labor Commissioner Leslie Osborne will be here to talk about the state of the workforce in Oklahoma. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to this episode of ObserverCast. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and share our episodes far and wide on social media. If you're interested in sponsoring ObserverCast, please give Arnold Hamilton a call at 405-478-8700 or drop him an email at ahamilton@okobserver.org. You can also support ObserverCast with a tax-deductible donation to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation, whose mission is to help create a better, more informed Oklahoma. And to help keep us on the air, visit okobserver.org and click on the Donate button on the upper right side of the homepage. We also urge you to subscribe to the Oklahoma Observer, now in its 55th year of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. We have a special digital subscription rate for ObserverCast listeners, only $1.99 a month for the first year. That's 50% off the usual rate for monthly digital subscribers. Just use the coupon code ObserverCast when checking out to get the discount rate. And finally, we want to thank Jared Deck for the music you're listening to in the background here. He's not just a resident of Norman anymore. He is now the Oklahoma State Representative for House District 44. Congratulations, Representative Deck. We're so proud of you. But you can still download his albums at iTunes and learn more, including dates for any upcoming performances at jareddeckmusic.com.